Not sure what baggage you bring along to a discussion about observing the Sabbath, but I have a little baggage. My baggage, when I unpack it, is about what I may or may not do on Sunday. And my baggage includes some worry, not just over what's right or wrong to do on a Sunday, but what other people will think about what I do or don't do on Sunday. Picking tomatoes from the garden, probably okay. Pulling weeds, Mowing the yard, oh my, definitely not. And if I'm going to work, best be indoor with the curtains closed. Sorry, that's just how I was brought up. And actually, I am exaggerating a bit. I don't have many hang-ups about those particulars anymore, and a lot of people I know don't either. But hang-ups aside, or baggage aside, I think we, that is almost all of us, get Sabbath mostly wrong. We don't think often enough and deeply enough about Sabbath and how to incorporate it into our lives as a discipline. A joyful discipline, but a discipline nonetheless. I hope this morning to help us move the pendulum. We have swung from a legalistic and almost oppressive view, which is quite unfortunate, to a dismissive and almost non-existent view, which is even more unfortunate. I want us to reclaim the challenging practice of Sabbath as a gracious gift from a loving God. Yes, a practice as a gift. We start with the last verse of our Deuteronomy 5 reading this morning, which should make any of us with baggage about the Sabbath sit up and take notice and ask, what? Let me read it again in case you missed it. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Hear that? I am a God who delivers and frees people. Therefore, because of that reason, observe the Sabbath day. God lays out the details of Sabbath as a follow-up to the greatest act of deliverance in the history of God's people. I don't think I ever got that message growing up. The list of required and prohibited behaviors was just not explained to me that way. That the whole reason we have Sabbath is because God wants us to be free of anything oppressive. So, as we begin to rethink, reevaluate Sabbath, maybe our first line of inquiry should be, what is oppressing us these days? What kind of exodus are we in need of, for which God may be asking us to lean more strongly into the practice of Sabbath? And how might the practice of Sabbath be the exact kind of gift that our delivering God wants us to experience? So let's talk a bit about our typical 21st century American lives and how it might impact the way we look at Sabbath. Many of us in the church have come to see Sabbath or Sunday through the lens of an overfilled, overdistracted, overstressed life. And yes, I know that Sunday and Sabbath aren't the same thing. Some people say that's part of the problem, that we have demoted Sabbath and ignore it too easily. But whatever the day for Sabbath, I don't think the call and the gift are any less important today. I like Walter Brueggemann's definition of Sabbath. this renowned Old Testament sophisticated scholar who has written volumes defines Sabbath in two words: work stoppage. Work stoppage. We can't get around that fact, nor do we want to. The gift of being able to rest on one out of 7 days was a gift given in the creation story itself. God rested, and that rest signified something important for God and us. This is good. This is enough. And it will continue without my striving. God designed things to run without God controlling every detail. If God can rest, that is, just be present with creation and enjoy it, maybe we can too. By sitting down and doing nothing on the seventh day, save enjoying what was, God was signaling to us human creatures that we are also created to work and then to stop working and enjoy what is before we return to work again. So, what does work stoppage mean to you, to me, to us? Well, what did it mean in the biblical economy? In an ancient agrarian economy, there was no concept of 5-day work weeks and 8-hour days. No one could even imagine a life like ours. To them, work equaled survival. You began work when there was enough light to see by, and you stopped work when it got too dark to see, and about all you could do was sleep. Stopping work for one complete cycle, a full day of sunlight, meant an active choice not to produce more, but to accept what was as enough. It was an act of radical trust. It was a leap of faith to put that daylight into God's hands and leave it there. We live our lives at a frenzied pace, dictated not by a need for survival, for food and clothing and shelter, but by a distorted drive to succeed or to win out one over the other or not miss out on anything, where every possibility or potential must be explored. In this kind of life, then what is equivalent to work stoppage? What is our equivalent? If our life's work seems to be a frenzied, clawing effort to find meaning, if we are continually striving to prove ourselves worthy, then what really is work stoppage? We work on our jobs only a few hours compared with our biblical counterparts and other pre-modern agrarian societies. But when we're not on the clock, so to speak, many of us keep working, trying to find what we're looking for. We fill our remaining hours with all kinds of distracting work activities designed either to give meaning to our lives that we don't already have or to hide pain in our lives that we do have and want to avoid. That frenzied pace that extracurriculars insert into our lives effectively shield us from either facing the big void or having to sit in darkness for a while. So our work is a different kind of work than our ancient biblical forebears, but it is still work, I would argue, and it is still not Sabbath. It is still not resting in a deep trust and delight as God designed and as God demonstrated. No, we aren't slaves in Egypt, literally, but we are oppressed by forced labor, by our own desperate need to find worth, to escape the dark, to win the rat race, whatever it may be. And we will know nothing of Sabbath until we experience a genuine work stoppage in every sense, until we find rest and peace and a sense of enough, until we decide that we are not responsible to make everything happen, until we can look on our life work and trust a loving, delivering God to fill in the gaps. Even much of what we think constitutes rest and recreation is not actually work stoppage. Our non-work pursuits may be some worthwhile hobby or sports or even the arts, but if our joy in that activity is not a pure joy that releases control of the outcome, that trusts in the goodness of God and the goodness of others, then sorry to say, you haven't stopped working. What gives us the idea that going to a youth soccer match, for instance, on Sunday and putting excess pressure on our kids to win and yelling insults at the refs and harboring resentment toward the coach and other parents when my kid doesn't get the break, what makes us think that's any kind of Sabbath? And what makes us think that after a crazy busy week, crashing from exhaustion on the sofa Sunday afternoon, vegging out on football and nachos while absorbing literally hundreds of frantic ads promising a better life, while surfing Facebook and finding that your friends travel to happy and beautiful places you can't afford, or spout off stupid and ill-informed political ideas that makes you want to puke, what makes you think that is any kind of Sabbath? You see, when we get hung up on defining work as being on the clock or engaging in physical chores, then we misidentify the gift of Sabbath. Sabbath is freeing ourselves of oppression. It's accepting God's gift of freedom from the slavery of distractions and anxieties that we never have enough or that we never are enough. If you think God is more pleased with you on Sunday, if you lay on the sofa with cheesy nachos and slick commercials and get all emotionally invested in your team's victory, than if you go mow your yard without earbuds and a podcast and engage in the practice of gratitude and presence and prayer while you do it, then I'm sorry to say that you misunderstand God. Go mow your yard this afternoon. This is your pastor giving you permission. Go mow your yard if you can do so while being attentive to the gifts of God, like your physical body in motion, getting exercise, like the created world that you're interacting with, like your prayerful mind that you can choose to be open to whatever thoughts the Spirit may bring your way. But if you mow your yard on Sunday because Sunday is your last best chance in an overfilled week to get some unpleasant chores done, and you mow it while distracting yourself with anxious thoughts and a political podcast, then I won't be a Pharisee and get all offended about it, but I'll just say you might be turning down a wonderful gift from God, which is the gift of Sabbath. Working on the Sabbath is not about how much you move your body. It's about how much you are striving to make things happen. as opposed to accepting God's gift of rest, of trust, of being satisfied with enough, of being present with God and present with yourself and present with others and with the world. The Pharisees in Jesus' day, as we heard in Mark chapter 2 and 3 this morning, did get all offended when they misdefined work when the disciples plucked some grain to eat as they traveled and when Jesus healed a disfigured man. They forgot that Sabbath was not about following a physical activity checklist, but was an active choice to be present with each other and with God, to be attentive and to be compassionate. Sabbath is a gift to us from God. Let's not waste it. I was listening to a podcast driving home from Ohio last week. It was a Monday, and it wasn't about politics. It was a TED Radio Hour about distraction and the art of paying attention. The speaker was Tristan Harris, who runs the Center for Human Technology. He's concerned from an entirely secular and psychological basis about addiction to technology and the constant distractions that we have. He says that the way we use our smartphones leads to an all or nothing relationship with technology. I quote, "You're either on and you're connected and distracted all the time, or you're off, but then you're wondering, what am I missing something important?" In other words, you're either distracted or you have a fear of missing out, unquote. There, without knowing it, he is identifying the main reason we have trouble with Sabbath: fear. The fear of missing out. The fear of not producing enough to satisfy our desires. The fear of not earning enough, not doing enough, not being enough. Another speaker on that same podcast was Manoush Zomorodi, a tech journalist and author, and she made the case for putting ourselves in a space where our mind can rest and go into default mode, where we invite our minds to get bored, to wander, to daydream. When do we purposely take time for that? It's at those moments, she said, and I quote, that we connect disparate ideas, we solve some of our most nagging problems, we look back on our lives, we take note of the big moments, we create a personal narrative, we set goals, unquote. But no, instead of giving ourselves to those moments, we chill out on the couch while updating a Google Doc or answering email or perusing the pretty lives of our friends. She cited a study claiming that the average person checks email 74 times a day and switches tasks on their computer 566 times a day. Maybe our Sabbath should include a screen Sabbath. I grew up thinking that daydreaming was a kind of distraction. Maybe instead, to daydream is to have a clear, open mind. And distraction keeps us from being good daydreamers. I like that idea. When Irene and I traveled to Israel-Palestine 6 years ago, we spent one weekend in a homestay with an Orthodox Jewish family to get an experience of a real Sabbath. At a particular time, as the sun set on Friday evening, their TV screen was covered with a cloth. All electronic devices were powered off. The mother of the family had all her food dishes finished and on very low heat on the stove. The father of the house put away his cigarettes and his lighter. The car stayed in the garage. And for 24 hours, we did nothing except walk down the street to worship at the synagogue, sit around a table at a joyous Shabbat meal, sit on the back porch with them, and when another family stopped by to visit, watch their children splash in the family pool, go to a nearby park to swing and slide and climb, walk down the street and visit some other families, and eat more leftovers. The air was still because there were no cars or trucks running at all in the vicinity. No, that's not realistic for us, for a whole society to shut down the way an Orthodox Jewish town can. But where and how might we communally, not just individually, but communally, practice Sabbath, practice work stoppage, practice rest and trust and freedom from anxiety? It strikes me that this summer season of ours for us as a church community gives us some opportunities for that. We can rest from whatever anxiety might tempt us as ordinary places and rhythms of church life get interrupted. We can choose to not cover our anxiety with striving or feel a need to manufacture an experience. We can receive this absence of permanence as a gift and look for joy in the moment. Look for opportunities to experience grace and to experience enough, even without what we usually have around us. I've talked for a while. You've listened for a while. It's been good, but it's enough. Time for rest. There's a gift that God has for us to receive. Let's open ourselves to it. If you will, lay out your open hands, open palms out in front of you, in the receiving position. And maybe close your eyes, whatever helps your mind to be open and clear and free of distraction. I give you just one question to ponder as the musicians get ready to provide some music for us. This is the question. In what area of your life are you filled with anxiety, overcome by some oppressive fear or worry, or some other kind of overwork and overstriving? Can you receive the gift of Sabbath rest that God offers you? And what does that gift look like for you right now? Let your mind go where the Spirit takes it while we listen to our musicians offer us a gift.